Welcome to the Maurer Report. I'm your host, Jim Maurer. Before the Fastest Hour in Paranormal Talk Radio starts, please go over to facebook.com/iTalkParanormal and give it a like. And leave a message telling me what show you're listening to. I enjoy the fan feedback.
The opinions expressed in the Maurer Report are those of the hosts and participants and are not intended to and do not necessarily reflect the opinions of any simulcasting radio network or sponsor. All listeners are advised to make their own decisions.
It's the Maurer Report. Yeah, the Maurer Report, the paranormal talk radio show with Jim Maurer as your host. See what lies beneath any paranormal activity. Go inside a world that others don't wanna see. It's the Maurer Report. Yeah, the Maurer Report.
That it is. I want to welcome everybody to the Maurer Report. And my guest tonight is Josh Hurd. How are you doing tonight, Josh?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me, Jim.
Oh, no problem. I like bringing on... you're a rounded man, so we've got a lot to talk about. So where do you want to start? You want to start with writing, or do you want to start with the paranormal and the things?
We could start with the writing. That's fine.
Because I guess it all intertwines together, so I guess I can't really...
Sure.
So what made you want to write first? Let's start there. That'll be a fun question to ask first.
The main reason I wanted to write was just basically the story of what the first book is about. Like, I just wanted to tell the story to a bigger audience. I mean, I do lectures and whatnot here and there, different libraries and different things like that, but I really wanted to put this book out just to really... get it out to the masses, you know, because I think it's a very important story to be told. So,
yeah. But still, I've joked about writing. I don't want to say joked about writing a book. That's not correct. Oh, but it has been. My favorite punchline is, if I only had a ghostwriter, I could write a book.
Yeah, dude. So, I totally understand that.
So there is the wanting to write or having a story to tell, and then actually sitting down and, well, I guess this is probably more of a metaphor now than it used to be. Put pen to paper. I'm sure you didn't actually. Did you actually write it out longhand?
No, this was just done on the computer, and it took quite a while. It took about a year and a half actually to do everything with research and the writing of it and all that good jazz. So it was quite the process.
I was going to say, and then I had a Brian Raffin on last week, and he was saying the worst part of the whole process is then you start editing.
Yeah, that's horrible.
It's like I'm going to put words in his mouth, taking your firstborn child and slaughtering them to pieces,
exactly,
and then trying to sew the pictures back up.
Yeah, that is exactly what it is.
So a year and a half, is that starting from idea to having it done, or is that just the writing, or...?
That was, having the idea, you know, talking with friends and all that, and having the idea and then doing the research itself, talking with the owners of the property and trying to get as much history as I possibly could on the place, which, unfortunately, there's not a lot. And there's more rumors about the church than anything, so...
I was just going to ask you, what kind of place? We're talking about a church.
Talking about an old church that was built back in 1901.
Okay. And if you... Sell me the book, but don't give me the book away. Sell the book, but don't give it away.
Okay. Basically, like, just looking at the place, it looks like an old barn with a very wide opening in the front. It's got three windows on each side, two windows in the back. I mean, we're literally talking 20 feet... to 25 feet side to side, and it's probably 45 feet, 50 feet deep. So, I mean, it's kind of a small structure, you know, but so very, very old. And, I mean, it fell into disuse, I believe, in the 60s, I want to say. If not the 60s, it was the 70s. But, yeah, fell into disuse and has just started to... basically fall apart. I mean, there's hunks of the floor that are missing and all sorts of good creepy stories that go along with it. There's rumors that a minister that worked there at the chapel that he supposedly went nuts, killed a few members of the congregation, and then hung himself from the rafters. So kind of creepy in itself there. Another story is of a Civil War soldier who roams the cemetery, which is actually just 15 feet to the east of this chapel. So they talk of this Civil War soldier who rides around on horseback. And then another one of the stories is a little girl named Emily who apparently runs around throughout the cemetery and the chapel itself. So there's a lot to investigate out there as far as claims of activity.
Sounds like a dangerous place because you normally hear these stories about other sane asylums, jails, whatever the case may be. So to hear you talking about a church for a change, I've always said that with all the spiritual activity or spiritual promotion or, you know,
sure,
trying to be very politically correct here. not that it's going to work, but I'm sure I offended somebody. But
no, I feel your pain.
But it does make sense to me that there's something going on there.
Yeah, and it's odd that what we ran into, like I was just a young, dumb college student who went to Northwest Missouri State in Maryville, Missouri, and this chapel is actually located just about 10 minutes away from there. Got there and it was about the Halloween season, so you start reading all these articles because, you know, that's when the mass media is interested in paranormal, is around Halloween, but no other time, obviously. So I heard about this church, and so me and a group of friends, we went out there a few times, and nothing really happened. But on one night in particular, we were out there doing an investigation, and a friend, Tiffany, crouched down in front of the opening there, just right at the doorway, and it looked as if like the whole room itself had gone black. And I mean, I say there are windows all around this thing, however the glass has long since been taken out, so it's really just the window frames, but you can see daylight through the structure. But on this particular evening, which was very bright as far as the moonlight and whatnot, you couldn't see through the structure at all. And so that was a little bit more than I had ever experienced before, and honestly a little more than I wanted to deal with because I didn't know what the heck I was getting into. So there's Tiffany crouched down and she just comments like, oh, I can't believe how black it is. But right at that moment, it looked as if she was hit by something with extreme force, like in her shoulder. She was crouched down like a catcher would be in baseball. And if you can imagine yourself like sitting in a chair and your legs extending out from your body and your arms extending out from your body, you're basically in a 90-degree angle there. And that's exactly what she did. She flew back a good 2 to 3 feet and did 2 backward somersaults over herself. I mean, so whatever it was that hit her with a great amount of force. And that's kind of what started this whole story then, and some sick, twisted love affair that I have with the location itself. So,
well, that happens from time to time. Could be worse, I guess. So, so this story goes into the book when a ghost hunter ghost hunting goes wrong. Is that the
correct?
Story?
Yeah.
Oh, and we've got a subtitle here: A Brush with Evil. Excuse me, I have it all wrote out, but
no, that's it though. Yeah. The week that followed, I mean, we got Tiffany after she had gotten hit at that moment. We took her back to campus. I mean, we had had our fill of fun for the evening. And so we took her back to campus, and another investigator, Rachel, took her back to her dormitory, and she just fell asleep. I'm like, okay, well, she's beat, you know, she's done. And so we're just going to let her sleep it off. Well, the next day I went to her room to check on her because I was concerned. And I went to check on her, and lo and behold, she was still in her bed. And I sat down on the bed, put my hand on her shoulder, and I just said, "Hey there." She rolled over and basically told me to blank off, if you can use your imagination there.
It's internet radio. We can actually probably say it if we wanted to.
But she, you know, that wasn't like Tiffany. Tiffany was very strong in faith to begin with. She had a very, what I like to call, effervescent personality, very bubbly. And she was just an all-around good person. But I will say this, like the entire week that followed that investigation, she did not go to a single class, which was not like her in any way, shape, or form. And she was a straight-A student. And she didn't go to the lunchroom to have a single meal. She literally never left that room. She was in that bed. And so I was doing some research because, like I said, I had no idea what just happened. Called a pastor friend of mine, and he said it sounded like not necessarily possession by a demon or anything like that, but it was what he was describing as an imp, which if a demon or whatever would be like the right-hand man of the devil, an imp would be the right-hand man of a demon. So the team and I took precautions and read up a lot on the subject. I'm trying not to give too much of the book away.
But, that's fine. I understand the struggle, I'm sure.
And there is a lot more to the story. However, like, you know, we cleansed ourselves. We took Tiffany back to the chapel.
That was nice.
Because whatever this imp was somehow attached to the land itself or to the structure itself. So in order for it to leave her, apparently we had to take her back, which was not an easy task. So kicking, screaming, punching, clawing, cussing, it was a horrible experience. But we got her in there, and she broke away from all of us. And I have my friend Dustin, who is – and I'm a big dude. I stand 6'1". You know, I weigh in at 215, and this guy is at least 8 inches taller than I am. He's a big guy. And she pushed him away and, like, got in this weird position that I can barely even describe it, other than, like, a crouched, like a tiger about to pounce on an injured gazelle. And I said, if she runs, because she was staring right at Dustin, and I said, if she runs, we have to tackle her. You know, I'm going to, like, open field tackle this girl in the middle of this church. But that's exactly what happened. And we started praying. And it was, we grabbed her, we placed hands on her. Everyone was saying their own prayers all together. So it was really a very chaotic moment. But whatever it was that we all were saying seemed to work, because she let out a blood-curdling scream that I swear would have awoken any number of those deceased people who laid only feet away in the adjoining cemetery. So she cried uncontrollably. She had no recollection whatsoever of that previous week. She thought in her mind that it was the exact same night as the week before. So she, in her mind, had lost 7 days. Like, it was completely gone. So, I mean, there is a ton more that happens, because in the book itself, I mean, I end up going back to the chapel with an entirely different team a couple years later. And I'm not going to give that part away, because you will not even come close to believing what happened then. So I'm going to leave that. I'm going to leave it at that and leave people hanging a little bit on that.
Well, that is your prerogative, and that is how we're going to sell the book, and that's what we're doing tonight.
Sure.
Of course, my guest tonight is Josh Hurd. I almost said Joshua for some reason. I don't know, but
that's fine.
Anyways, I guess it's more proper. And we've been talking about when ghost hunting goes wrong, they brush with evil. Okay, so we've covered that, and you can get that on Amazon and what's that other site? Barnes and Noble.
Barnes and Noble, yeah.
And so go find it, and I'll be posting links in the podcast blog and all that stuff if anybody wants to go find it. But okay, so what about the other book we've got here, Haunting the Hunters? What's going on there?
Haunting the Hunters, that, you know, that all stemmed, the idea from that stemmed from something that I touched on a little bit earlier with this sick, twisted love affair that I have with this location. And why is it that these locations seem to call out to us as investigators in a way? I live 45 minutes away from the Villisca Axe Murder House, so I've stayed there four times overnight, and that place never disappoints. So I mean, that's another one of those places that have always just like called out to me, and I can't even hear Villisca or Workman's Chapel without like something inside of me stirring, and just I go crazy. I get that itch where I just like I want to go hunting, you know. That's what happens. So I wrote a book as to like why would this happen to us? Like why would I want to go, like, for example, back to this chapel where I see some of the most horrible things happen to people who are very close to me? And why is it that we do this to ourselves? And so the only thing that I could really come up with as an answer would be those locations are the closest that we have ever come to touching and interacting with the other side and really getting a sense of we're so close to an answer, that same answer that always burns within each and every one of us is ultimately what we're after. And that's, you know, what really happens to us when we expire.
He puts it so nicely there.
When we croak.
No, that's a very good, very true point. So are they a sequel set, or can they be read separately, or?
Absolutely read separately, yeah. I actually barely talk about Workman's Chapel in the second book. I talk a lot about Villisca and a few other cases for sure that have just registered with me on a personal note. So,
all right. Well, I just wanted to make sure before we brushed off the topic here, make sure everybody was comfortable with that. Again, that's also Amazon, Barnes & Noble. I feel like I'm always missing one. There should be a third one, so I can get
iBookstore is another one, yeah.
Yeah, there we go.
iBookstore has one, yeah.
So, you mentioned we were trading messages this morning, and you mentioned you're doing an event, but it's already sold out, but I still want to talk about it, so let's go ahead and talk about it for a minute. What's going on? What are you doing?
We are... I decided... There's been a lot of hype surrounding the book, the first book, and so I wanted to take people there, give them an opportunity to actually experience this place for themselves, which may be a crazy idea, I guess, but I basically asked if anybody would be interested and got a lot of responses. So I was like, through eventbrite.com, I threw up this event and offered 40 tickets. But I was like, you know, it's a really small building, and there's no way I'm fitting 40 people in there, comfortably anyway.
Right.
And so I decided to break it up into 2 days and have 20 people or 20 tickets available for each day. And it sold out, I think, within 10 days. The event sold out. So that was really encouraging, which makes me just want to do more and more events. So I think the Villisca Axe Murder House will definitely be on the list for probably next summer, and maybe possibly later on next summer. I want to definitely hit up the Myrtles Plantation in Louisiana too, and do an event down there, because we could definitely have more people along for that trip. So
yeah, obviously the bigger the venue, the more people, the more stuff you can do.
But yeah, the main focus of the event itself is just to basically take people deeper into the story. Give them the stories and the experiences that I never wrote down. You know, let them ask any question that they want, because I put a lot of personal stuff into this book. I just felt it necessary. Basically, it tied in with the story. And so there's a lot of things about my personal life, me growing up, like my first paranormal experience ever I put in there. And it was all very personal. So I openly invite anybody to ask any question that they want, because if I can throw it down in a book, I should be able to just talk about it. So
yeah, we would help.
Yeah.
So what's since you were talking about when you're growing up, what's back up the ship that has sailed, I guess. So when did you when did you start investigating?
I would say I was about 13 or 14 years old. Had a really weird experience with an uncle that was very close to me who passed away. And it was very weird experiences that happened in the days just following his death. And ever since then, I mean, I've always had a fascination with, like, you know, ghosts and stuff. But, I mean, I was just a little kid. I think we're all into that stuff. But that really got me asking the bigger questions, you know? It's like, wow, there really is something else out there that we all need to, well, at least I need to explore. I'm very passionate about finding answers.
That's always a good thing, though, I think.
Yeah.
It helps you be a better investigator when you're always continuing the question and think. There's a word.
I think so, too. And, I mean, I think it also helps, you know, especially when you get that quote-unquote really good piece of evidence that, you know, you have to go over hundreds of times and basically think of anything that this possibly could be before you go ahead and say, oh, this is totally paranormal, you know. There's so many people out there that are just chomping at the bit to rip you apart when it comes to evidence, so...
Yeah, and I don't even look at that anymore, truthfully. So I'm not one of those people.
Yeah.
Just for the record, for anybody, I get a few things here and there, and I look at it, and I just, you know, it's yours, and I, you know, having not been there, and
exactly.
You send me one picture, and I have no idea what I'm looking at.
Yep.
Oh, quick back. Where in Louisiana, easy for me to say, are you talking about having an event?
I was thinking about doing an event there at the Myrtles Plantation, which is in St. Francisville, Louisiana.
Okay, because somebody just popped it in the chat room there, and I was going to type, and I couldn't remember, so, of course.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't jot that down, because I didn't really, you know, didn't have, so.
Yeah.
So, I think you're one of my Twitter people, right? So
yes, I am.
Do you like Twitter?
I love Twitter.
I'm going to shift and mix it around a little bit here, so.
Sure.
That'll have got the work out of the way. We can have a little fun.
I'm all about it.
So you like Twitter?
I love it. Yeah.
Some people don't. So why do you like Twitter?
I use it more for the like a mini blog type of aspect of everything. I mean, I'm a musician as well. I have a band in Omaha, Nebraska, and I throw a lot of stuff up on Twitter about that and Facebook. I never have been the social media guy up until about a year ago. So,
so what changed? Selling the book, probably.
Honestly, yeah, the book. That's what made it all change. But now it's like I'm addicted to like Twitter and Facebook and all that fun stuff. So
we're doing a disservice here. I'm at iTalk Paranormal. I'm also at Mallard. If anybody wants to follow my personal musings. And you're at Joshua Hurd, 1981. I'm assuming that's the year you were born, just not.
Yes, that's it. Yeah. Yeah, I'm real original when it comes.
I'm glad I assumed right there, because that could have been really awkward. No, that was the year I graduated high school. You dumbass. No.
Yeah. Right. Oh my gosh.
No, I like Twitter more and more every day. I've been trying to shift from Facebook, because Facebook gets so bogged down with crap anymore.
Yes, it does. It's like, I'm sorry, but I don't care about your cute little recipes.
or what the cat says today, I really don't.
Yeah, dude, that's totally right. Oh, my gosh.
And there goes our friends list, right?
Yeah, it's gone now. It's like, well, fine, whatever.
So you don't like my cat pictures, delete. I don't like your show anymore. Oh.
I tell you, man. But yeah, there's also this other website out there that I found. I'm actually featured on it for the next 3 months. They have me featured on the main page there. It's at paraprofile.com, and it's basically very similar to Facebook. And it's just like social media for all things paranormal. It's kind of cool, and it's really just on the ground floor right now. But it's kind of fun. Yeah. I'm telling you.
There you go. Good plug for them. I noticed you were featured there. So, I haven't actually created the account there. I've been there a couple different times doing some research on people, and
sure,
I should probably create an account. But it's just another one that's, you know, you start creating these accounts in different places, and you go,
yeah. What was that password again?
Yeah. No, you just use password. Hope somebody doesn't catch
oh,
on.
Oh, yeah, there you go.
Oh, no, I have to change 400 passwords tonight after the show.
That's right. But no, I try to tweet as much as possible. I do more retweeting, I think, than anything. So.
Yeah, I do the old retweet with my own comment attached to it most of the time.
Heck yeah.
That sounds like fun. Add a hashtag to somebody's tweet. Really probably is annoying to the people that I do it to, but oh well.
Very nice.
So, musician, what kind of music do you play?
The band that I'm in, we're called JB Acoustic. And don't Google it because you'll come up with a lot of Justin Bieber things. So, the JB would obviously stand for Josh, and Brad is my other partner in crime. He plays percussion, I play guitar, and we both sing and do all sorts of fun stuff. We play everything, literally anything from Garth Brooks to Tool. We are everywhere, all over the map, and try to please as many people as possible. So we do a lot of shows.
So all covers or some original? Or?
Yeah, we're actually working on originals right now. I have a whole book full of stuff that we're going to start sitting down and coming up with original stuff. But
no,
as
no,
of right
no, we
now,
already talked about the books. No, you don't have to sing those.
Yeah, right.
It takes audio notebook to a whole other level right there.
Oh, that would be horrible. Oh, my gosh. That would be horrible. So, yeah, man.
So I'm assuming, how long you been doing that? Probably.
Oh, man, I've been playing music. I've been playing guitar since I was 16, and I've been in different bands, odds and ends, ever since then, really. It's like I'm 31 now, so, yeah, so quite a while.
Well, almost half your life. We'll do some fuzzy music there.
Yeah, there you go. Half the life. Yeah, man, close that enough. Sounds weird when you say it like that, but that's absolutely true.
That's what we're doing, bringing stuff up weird tonight. That's okay.
I love it.
I keep telling myself that I need to say the Mallard Report more because it's the brand and people should know who they're listening to, but sometimes people tell me they don't know who they're listening to because they're listening live, and I don't understand how they don't know what they're listening to, but because it's not FM. It's not like you just randomly hopped on and figured it out. But okay.
That's true.
So there, the Mallard Report, I've said it twice in the same show, so probably good for a few weeks. My guest tonight is Joshua Hurd. Joshua? Jeez, a Pete. Okay. Anyways,
yes.
Josh Hurd. It just happens. Now that it's in my mind, it's just the train has sailed on that ship, obviously.
That's what happened.
Oh, that was a good metaphor right there. But anyway, so not the last thing I want to talk to you about, but the last. I'm reading your Twitter bio here. We've talked about, we haven't talked about being a father or a husband, but I'm sure those are great things in your life. We've talked about being a musician, and we're going to talk a little bit more about being a paranormal investigator. Of course, we talked a little bit about that before. Talked about writing the books, but the last thing over here is lecture. What do you lecture on?
Basically, I do a few different styles of lectures. One, I'm actually giving a couple here in the next week for teens. And so this is exclusive to teenagers who are interested in the paranormal, interested in investigating the paranormal, and kind of how to get started in all of this fun stuff. And basically trying to get through their heads that you can't treat everything like like Zach Bagans.
Are you kidding me? You can't do it.
Yeah.
That would have been a much better video moment right there where I was waving my arms around like an idiot.
But, I mean, it's basically, you know, it's trying to get it through their heads that, you know, these film crews and all that stuff, they're at a location for literally 3 to 4 days at a time.
Yes.
And then they whittle everything down into 44 or 42 minutes or whatever and, you know, throw it out to the masses. And not every bump and creak is something paranormal. And another thing that I like to kind of scare them with is, you know, when you're watching a TV show, how easy is it to turn the channel? You know, but when you're actually investigating, you can't have that luxury. If you see some black shadow walking directly towards you or running towards you, it's like you're in that moment, dude. You have to own that. So there's no channel to change at that moment.
Yeah, and it could follow you home, and you could leave
Absolutely.
A mess for somebody else or yourself. So.
And that was, you know, that was my biggest thing with the whole, you know, writing the book is what happens to us when we're out and about, you know, thrill seeking, and we literally bite off more than we can chew, because it can happen. It does happen. I mean, I'm living frickin' proof of that. I mean, the point I think is to be educated on the subject as much as possible before all of that. And I mean, I'm guilty of it as well. I was out there, not necessarily, I mean, I called myself a paranormal investigator, but I was anything but that. I mean, I think I was more or less just wanting to get scared. And bad stuff happens. So.
And back to the TV show production thing, I had a member of GHI, Ghost Hunters International, on over a year ago, and we talked off air, and I won't divulge everything he told me, but this is the general, we'll paraphrase, because of course I'm not selling the book, but just to protect him a little bit. They went 3 days, they investigated the first night, reviewed, investigated, reviewed, so you can imagine how much sleep they're getting during these little
things. No doubt.
And on the third day, he kind of said, you weren't told what to say, but you kind of got the direction of what they were trying to produce at that point.
Yeah.
So you kind of followed their lead.
Sure.
So it wasn't investigating that third night. It was more producing, filming, reenacting.
Yeah. And it absolutely makes sense. So, I mean, they have a product to sell, bottom line, you know. I mean, that's how it is. And it's not necessarily the investigators themselves, but more or less the networks. I think they're kind of fueling that fire, but they also sign the paychecks.
Hey, as long as it sells, and it does.
Yeah, oh yeah, it does.
It doesn't sell to me. I hate every show. I haven't found one that I liked watching yet. I like the premise of the Dead Files, the medium versus the history research.
That is pretty cool.
But I don't like that show. I get dizzy because they start snapping those cameras around, and I don't understand why they have the professional camera and the guy filming it. And
yeah.
You could do so much better if we quit switching cameras and just focused on the content of the show.
That's just it. One show that I have recently found that I almost fell in love with was that what was it called? I think it's called Stranded.
Oh yeah.
And I think it was Josh Gates is kind of at the helm of that. But
I don't want to badmouth him. I'm trying to get him on. Correction for the record, he's a great guy.
Oh heck yeah. But I'm telling you, man, they just lock those people in a house for like 3 days and like or 5 days or whatever it is and go to town. And it's really cool because I think it's more real because you don't see people on those ghost hunting shows like really, really, truly frightened. It's like these people are straight running out of rooms screaming at the top of their lungs. I love that. It's like that's so real to me. And I really dug that.
So, have you ever seen the movie Grave Encounters?
No, I haven't.
You need to find it. I found it on Netflix. It's a good spoof of paranormal TV shows. You'll like it.
Wait a second. I think I have seen this. I think I just watched it last week, actually. Actually, let me rephrase. I think I watched half of it last week.
Yeah, it's a very cheesy horror film, but
yeah,
overall.
Are they kind of like God, I don't remember. Are they filming too?
Yeah, it was kind of like a ripoff of Zach and some other people mixed together.
Yeah, you could kind of tell. I have seen that.
Yeah, so, and there's a second one out now.
I don't know. Oh, is there really?
There's a second one, so get back and find that. So.
Nice.
And I'm pretty sure we've just spun totally out of control, and there might be somebody still listening, but that's okay. There's a lot of I'm in the my chat room here at italkparanormal.com. Of course, I got the other ones open as well. And I was just telling somebody, I hate the phrase para-unity, and they're enjoying that. So that's a whole other can of worms that I'm not going to open. I promised the first of the year not to mention that. So I did pretty good. I went 6 months without mentioning it on air. So, but I'm not going to bash it anymore. I've already said my piece on that, so we're just going to skip over that. So you're an investigator.
Yes.
So where are you with the equipment, and where are – just give me a rundown of where you're at position-wise. I mean, I'm assuming –
You know, I have a couple, cameras and whatnot that I take with me, a few EMF detectors, digital recorders, laser grids, like all that toys and all the fun stuff like that. But the biggest thing that I preach is, all the toys and whatnot, they're fine and dandy, but I really like to take mental notes. If I'm getting a spike or anything, or some kind of a hit, like on a K2 meter, I like to pay attention to how I feel personally inside at that moment. It's like, what is going on with me physically at this moment, and try to correlate any type of similarities that might be going on. So I'm a firm believer that the best ghost hunting tool available to us, is our own bodies. It's just figuring out why we feel certain ways at certain times and how we feel at those certain times.
Yeah, and the K2, any piece of equipment is great. It has its limits, though. So.
Yes, it does. See, and that's just it. I mean, a text message will set off a K2 meter. If you do have your cell phone
if you could time it up right, you can have some fun with a new investigator, though.
Yeah, you could, man. You really could.
So.
That's actually a really good idea. I should do that.
I used to do it with a two-way radio because it was easier to do. That way I didn't have to sit there and type the whole time.
Sure.
Less conspicuous. You could just click it.
I tell you, one other piece of equipment that I do have, and I mean, the jury's still out for me on this, but it's the, it's the Spirit Box, that SB7 Spirit Box. I picked one of those up. I think it was on Amazon. But it was, I don't know. I'm still very curious as to what I'm picking up.
Yeah.
It's
convoluted at best at times, it seems to me.
Well, that's just it. As far as like the toys and stuff, is there really a cut and dry thing that we have available to us?
Flashlight. I want to use it to walk around in the dark, not communicate, though.
Exactly. And I've seen the flashlight trick, too. I mean, I've done the flashlight trick, and it has, quote-unquote, worked. But I don't know if it was, anything paranormal, if it was just so loose that it's at that, it's right at that mark where anything could happen. I mean, you could jump on the floor, and it could go off. So, I don't know. The jury's still out on a lot of those toys for me.
And for the record, I've mentioned this before, but I like to mention it again. Maglite, the corporation, has no comment one way or the other about that. I contacted them. I was hoping they would say, no, that's just... Nope, they don't comment on it because they want to keep
no
those flashlights.
Man, that is crazy. They must have actually been doing like really good business then.
Well, any business is a good business. I can tell you that.
Yeah,
right now.
That's the truth. Oh, my goodness.
What's your least favorite piece of equipment? We've been talking...
I do have a very old EMF detector that has this extendable arm that comes out to it. It's like this little wire attached to this little sensor. And that's probably my least favorite piece of equipment, just because it's one of the needles for a readout, and you have to have a flashlight to really see what's going on, and it's just really hard to read because it seems like as soon as a hit is there, it's gone. So unless you're holding it right up to your TV. So
I was talking about this over the weekend on Twitter, so bear with me. Ouija board. Yes, no, maybe so.
You know, honestly, I've talked to a lot of people about the Ouija board, and the general consensus, and I kind of feel the same way, is like, you know, we'll sit there with a K2 meter and we can ask yes or no questions. We'll sit there with a spirit box and we can ask questions, usually getting a, you know, one or two syllable response. What the hell is the difference? Is sitting down with this Ouija board and, you know, I mean, a lot of people are like, oh no, don't touch a Ouija board. And I was like that for many years, but now I'm kind of like, I'm doing the same damn thing. You know, with all these pieces of equipment, I'm still asking questions. It's like even doing an EVP session is, in essence, the same type of thing, just minus the planchette, you know, and the lit candles.
So as I was telling this person on Twitter, I said, well, I just don't like it because I don't like the spell. It has nothing to do with the connection to the other side.
That's great.
I just don't like the spell. That's just it. I mean... Might as well throw some Scrabble tiles out, too. I just don't care.
That would be kind of a pain in the butt. Kind of sit there and,
You've got to have somebody transcribing it for you or something.
Yeah. You would almost have to. Because I'm horrible with that stuff, too. I'd be like, okay, what was the last letter? Or either that, or I'd be like sounding it out as it went.
Yeah.
And I would sound kind of weird.
And I guess the other assumption that people make about this is because, you know, you've got the K2 and the recorders and all these other things, they'll have batteries on them. So
yeah.
That must be what protects them from the other side.
The batteries.
That's my working theory. Why the Ouija board? So if we shove batteries in the Ouija board for some non-apparent reason, but we could.
We could put, like, cool little lights around it.
Yeah, you could LED light it so you could see it at night. I guess they have a glow-in-the-dark one, too, but, you know.
Oh, heck yeah.
I also seen pictures of a pink one floating around. I'm thinking.
I was just going to say that. I saw a picture of a pink one around. I forget where I saw it exactly, but yeah. I was like, how about that?
See, what we need is a really sensitive keyboard, and then they can just type the messages to me on my computer, and I could save it and walk out.
Yeah, no doubt.
Some tech guy's out there going, yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of. Oh, those old school methods. Like, I mean, you have, like, automatic writing, which is really cool phenomenon. And I don't know if you've ever, like, seen somebody do this with the automatic writing or the crystal on a string or anything like that. It's very interesting to see how that stuff works. And I've tried a few of those myself. But have you ever seen the tipping table? That little...
I have not seen it in person. I've seen videos and talked to a few people who have done it, but I've never tipped the table.
Yeah, I've only seen videos of it too, and I'm like, I'm fairly interested in that. But there again, it might just be a parlor trick from the turn of the century, you know. So
I think there's more to it. I don't think everybody has wobbly tables.
Right. Yeah, I hope. Thanksgiving's ruined everywhere.
Yes. And if it's not, just mention you played the Ouija board on the table, or tell them you listen to the Maurer Report. It's all over.
Very nice.
You listen to that paranormal show? Ugh. I always encourage people to invite people they don't like to like my show page.
Heck yeah.
That way they can just unfriend them then, because they won't get any more of those invites.
That is very cool.
There's sage advice for everybody. Mention me in a couple of tweets, and people that you don't like will follow up.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, besides the lecturing, what's the future hold? What's next? Are you writing any more books? Or
I have a few ideas about books. One that I'm really kicking around hard is this whole Black Eyed Children phenomenon that's just sprung up over the last 10 or so years. And it's really piqued my curiosity. I've never encountered a Black Eyed Kid, but I really want to. I find it fascinating that somebody could just be sitting at home and you have some creepy group of kids or whatever that come knocking on your door and all they want to do is come inside for a glass of water or to use the phone or
any Girl Scout cookies.
Right. demon. But it's I really want to get to the bottom of all this. And I mean, some people are asking, is it some kind of an alien intelligence? Is it something that's of demonic nature or what the hell is it? And I don't know. I think I'd really like to do a book on that. Right now I'm working on a few different ideas, regarding the, excuse me, the Shakti helmet. Have you heard of that?
I've heard of it. So you're looking for an investigator to turn it up full throttle on, is that what you're telling?
I'm looking to put it on myself basically and crank it up full throttle and see exactly what happens. Except when I do it, I want to be in one of the most haunted locations I could find. So you kind of see what happened.
So your basement. No.
Yeah, right. And actually, my basement is kind of creepy. I live in a house that was built in 1860. So, I mean, we're talking, it's old. Old, big brick and kind of creepy in itself. So it kind of fits me.
It's all right. That's how it goes. So, okay. Serious question. I mean, we've been kind of having some fun here, but you've mentioned giving lectures to teenagers. So what, or just in general, let's not go teenagers so much, but either way, we'll just, because when I preface a question this way, it's kind of getting long, but the question is, what advice would you give somebody, anybody, teenager, adult, senior citizen, getting into the field? What would be the first few things that you should plant in their mind?
My first thing would probably be I would try to guide them to educate themselves in any way and as much as possible. I would say, you need to pick up some books. Pick up some books on parapsychology, and pick up some books just on ghost hunting itself and paranormal investigating, and really get a feel for what this is all about, because it is anything but what you see on TV. It's this is, the paranormal has kind of been thrust into the mainstream as of lately, as of the last decade or so, with shows like Ghost Hunters and, Paranormal State and all those shows. I mean, it's become the thing that you talk about around the water cooler, at work. It was 20 years ago, you'd never even dream of mentioning to a buddy that, oh yeah, I'm going to go hunt ghosts. They're going to look at you like you're freaking nuts.
Like you're snipe hunting.
Exactly. Exactly. With your gunny sack and stick and all that. But yeah, but now it's just oh yeah. And it seems like everybody has a story. Everybody has that story. And if it hasn't happened to them, by God, it's happened to their cousin or their cousin's cousin or whoever. But everybody has a story to tell, which I find very interesting. I love meeting people and hearing their stories or their sister-in-law, baby cousin, Teresa, or whatever, their story. And so I find it fascinating. But I do think that the main thing that people need to be aware of is just the education aspect of it.
Right. And so this popped up in my chat room here. So what are some of the – we were talking about how the it kind of ruined the week of your team member there for a while. So what other adverse effects can we – that's extreme, obviously.
That is extreme. That's literally one in a million. But I will tell you, what happened in the second half of the book, that was a new team, and it has affected each and every one of us since the day it happened. I still wake up with nightmares. I mean, I'm waking up in cold sweats. I haven't gone a single week, a whole week since that night where I haven't woken up completely startled or whatever. So there are things that can, like you say, you know, follow you home and whatnot. And, you know, stuff does follow me home from investigations. I just got done with a couple really big locations here in Iowa and had some pretty interesting things for about 3 to 4 days after I got home from all these. Weird things were happening. Stuff was falling off the walls, and I'm very meticulous when it comes to certain things, like where my keys go, where my wallet lays. It's in the same spot every single day, every single night, when I'm ready to put them away. And my things would be moved. I would hear voices. I would feel like I was being touched on my back. But then after, like I said, 3 or 4 days, it just seems to leave you alone. But that's definitely one of the downfalls. The most inopportune times you've got somebody popping in and saying hello or whatever they're saying, kiss my ass maybe.
Well, that's the other thing I like to ask people is, if you were going to give advice to somebody that's going to start a team, I always say just hold off on it and talk to people around you, and you may find one that's already started and you don't have to go through that hassle.
But
you know how everybody is.
Oh yeah, they want to be the head honcho.
Right. So what would be your advice to somebody that says, you know what, I'm going my route? So what would be your advice to them?
Be like, okay, well, you can do that. However, I would say surround yourself with people that have been there. You know, really talk to people in the field. Make as many friends as you possibly can, and then get your team together and learn as a team and grow as a team. That would be my biggest piece of advice.
Yeah.
So
yeah. You have to be together as people first before you can.
Exactly. Yeah, there needs to definitely be a sense of camaraderie of some sort. So.
Yeah, and there's a trust level, and there's, oh goodness, there's so many things that go into a dynamic.
Yes.
You keep mentioning the word team, which makes me smile because that's what I fought for. When we started our team, so that word makes sure to drive that point of emphasis home.
Yeah.
Not exactly. Frowning upon group or society, which I frown upon society anyways, but that's a whole other conversation. Just because you're not a different class of people.
Right.
I just spend some time with a dictionary once in a while, people.
Amen.
Yeah. And I'm not even a writer. You're the writer. go ahead. Let's throw that out one more time before I run out of time, because I'll run out of time here in a hurry. Mention the books and all that
stuff. The books, the first book is titled When Ghost Hunting Goes Wrong, A Brush with Evil. The next book is called Haunting the Hunters, and both of those can be found on Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com, iTunes Store, you can follow me. I have a author page set up on Facebook. It's just Josh Hurd, and it's Hurd as in I heard you, H-E-A-R-D. So Josh Hurd, 1981, and that's also my Twitter handle, I guess, if that's what you want to call it, is at Josh Hurd 1981. And if you guys just want to, like, get a hold of me in any way, Josh Hurd Books at hotmail.com would be a great way to do it.
Hasn't heard Hotmail in a while. That's pretty...
Right? I'm old school, man.
Yeah. I finally broke down and went out and got myself a Gmail account for the show, which is... I needed to, though, because I needed to keep my personal email and my show email separate, because I was starting to delete stuff that was important for the one, but, you know, not the other.
I think I have 3 emails set up. It gets kind of confusing every once in a while, so plus with all the social media on top of that, it's tough stuff.
It's all right, though. It'll be good.
Oh, yeah.
We still
have a
website, so that's always positive. I have too many.
You know, yeah, and that's the next thing. You know, I mean, we have a band website, so we, you know, Brad does a good job of keeping that up and going, but that's, yeah, jbacoustic.com, and there's email through that as well. That's tough.
It's tough, but it's all rewarding, though. There's always an end to it, so.
Oh, yeah. And definitely meeting some interesting people along the way, too. So it's been a fun ride so far.
Sounds like it. Keeps you busy. Keeps you...
Absolutely.
I don't know. I've got, like, let's see, 2 minutes left. I don't know what I want to ask. So what, let's fill some time here. What do you want to talk about?
Because
everything I'm thinking of is, like, a 10-minute conversation. So it's hard when you're at the time of the show.
I understand that.
Oh, here. I jotted down Bigfoot earlier because you were mentioning UFOs. So what do you think about Bigfoot out there?
You know, I've never met him. So I would love to think that there is a possibility of a Bigfoot, Sasquatch, Yeti, whatever you want to call them. I would love to think that. And I would love to go out hunting for any of that. I mean, any of these type of cryptids, like chupacabras, anything like that. I would love that.
So just somebody in this room, Paranormal Mike, just threw in the chat room here. Ask him about Northern Lights Paranormal.
Hi, Mike. How's it going? No, Mike and Dave, they're at Northern Lights Paranormal. They are very good friends of mine. Very good friends of mine. So they're actually going to come down for the event in Maryville. So very excited to hang out with them again.
So there you go. People ask me all the time, why do I always read guest chatters' questions? Because they love it, and I love doing it. Because that's why I started the show. Because I ask a few hosts to ask my questions, and guess what? They didn't do it. So guess what? Now they're stuck with me doing their job better than they do.
Nice.
So it's a media. It's all social media, Facebook, Twitter, these chat rooms. It's all connecting with people.
It is. The world has become quite a bit smaller.
Yes.
Since the invention of all of this, which is very good. It's very cool. So
that's what we need. Smaller world.
Yeah, no doubt. As the population goes up.
But it's smaller now, so okay. Anyways. So, hey, I want to thank you for taking some time and being flexible with me. I know we've talked a couple different times about different dates and different things. So
I'm glad to do this, man. It's been a blast.
All right. Well, hey, I'm up against it, so I'll talk to you later.
All right. Sounds good. Thanks.
Before we flip that on-air sign to the off position, a quick reminder. For all things about the report, previews, and reviews, go to italkparanormal.com.